This is a philosopher who helps us think about money, capitalism, and our runaway consumer societies. Epicurus was an ancient Greek born in 341 BC. What made him famous was that he spent all his life trying to work out the largest puzzle there is. What makes people happy? Philosophers before him had discussed at length what could make people good. Epicurus preferred to look at what's fun. Unfortunately, the world was bitter and bitchy even then, and when people heard that Epicurus had set up a school to study happiness, the rumours went off the scale. There were tales that the school hosted 10-course feasts and orgies every night. Epicurus was said by one critic to have orgasmed 18 times in a single evening in a bed filled with virgins. It wasn't true. Epicurus and his team were studying happiness, but they were doing it very soberly. The philosopher owned only two cloaks and lived on bread, olives, and for a treat, an occasional slice of cheese. As for the bedroom, he merely responded demurely that he'd married philosophy. Having patiently studied happiness for many years, Epicurus came to a set of remarkable and revolutionary conclusions about what we actually need to be happy. He proposed that we typically make three mistakes when thinking about happiness. Firstly, we think happiness means having romantic, sexual relationships. But Epicurus looked around and saw so many unhappy couples, their unions marred by jealousy, misunderstanding, cheating, and bitterness. At the same time, he observed how much nicer friendships are, how people tend to be so decent and unpossessive with their friends. Friendship seemed to be where human nature was at its sweetest. The only problem, Epicurus noted, was that we don't see our friends enough. The next thing we ordinarily think we need to be happy is a lot of money. But we tend not properly to factor in the unbelievable sacrifices we're going to have to make to get this money, the jealousy, the backbiting, the long hours. What makes work really satisfying, Epicurus believed, isn't money, but it's when we're able to work alone or in small groups, like at a bakery or a boat repair shop, and when we feel we're helping others and in our own minor way improving the world. It isn't really large sums or status that we want deep down. It's a sense of making a difference. And lastly, Epicurus observed how obsessed we are with luxury, especially involving houses in beautiful, serene locations. But beneath our love of luxury, there's really something else we're trying to get at. What we want is a feeling of calm. We want our minds pure, free, not full of the normal bother and chaos. But the great question is, does luxury actually make us calm? Epicurus wasn't so sure. Having looked at happiness in depth, Epicurus announced a revolutionary set of insights: that you really need only three things to be happy in this life. Firstly, you need your friends around. No sex, no orgies, just your mates. Enough of seeing them only now and then. It's regularity of contact that counts. So he did that thing that most of us occasionally dream of doing, but never actually get around to. He bought a big house and started living with all his friends. Everyone had their own quarters, and there were pleasant shared areas too. There was always someone nice to talk to in the kitchen. Secondly, everyone downshifted. All the members of the commune stopped working for other people. They took big pay cuts in return for doing their own stuff. Some did farming, some cooking, some pottery or writing. And thirdly, Epicurus and his friends stopped thinking you could be calm just by having a beautiful view to look out on. They devoted themselves to finding calm in their own minds, through spending time on their own, reflecting, writing stuff down, reading things, meditating. The experiment was so successful, the members of the commune so happy, the idea spread like wildfire. Epicurean communities opened up all around the Mediterranean. At the height of the movement, there were 400,000 people living in communes from Spain to Palestine. It was only the Christian church that ended things in the 5th century, but they must have respected the community somehow because they converted them all into monasteries. What we know as monasteries are really just Epicurean communes with a Christian topsoil. Another interesting fact: Karl Marx did his PhD thesis on Epicurus, and what we call communism, that gigantic, dour, joyless, fail system, is really a grown-up, corrupted, not very successful version of Epicureanism. The real legacy of Epicurus is that human beings aren't very good at making themselves happy, chiefly because they think it's so easy. We think we know it's about sex, money, luxury. We just wonder how to secure all these. But no, says Epicurus, reflect on the moments that truly bring you happiness, and they aren't to do with these. Have the courage to change your life in accordance with the moments that actually deliver satisfaction. You might end up living in a very different way, out in the country, with just some cheese, a couple of cloaks, a few philosophy books, and some very good friends down the corridor. Stoicism was a philosophy that flourished for 480 years in ancient Greece and Rome and was popular with everyone from slaves to the aristocracy because, unlike so much philosophy, it was helpful. Helpful when we panic, want to give up, despair and rage at existence. We still honour this philosophy whenever we think of someone as brave and, without perhaps quite knowing why, call them Stoic. There are two great philosophers of Stoicism. The first is the Roman writer and tutor to Nero, Seneca. He lived between AD 4 and AD 65. That's right, tutor to Nero, the infamous dictator who slept with his own mother, raped young boys, and just because he felt like it, asked his old tutor, Seneca, to commit suicide in front of his own family. And our other guide to Stoicism is the kind and magnanimous Roman Emperor Marcus Aurelius, AD 121 to 180, who was forced to spend most of his reign on the edges of the empire, fighting off invincible Germanic hordes, but found time to write one of the greatest works of philosophy, the Meditations, in his tent at night. There are two problems Stoicism can help us with in particular. The first is anxiety. When you're feeling anxious about something, most people are maddening. They believe it's their duty to cheer you up. However intelligent they might otherwise be, they say things like, it'll be okay, don't worry, even cheer up. The Stoics were appalled. They hated any kind of consolation that aims to give the listener hope. Hope is the opium of the emotions and must be stamped out conclusively for a person to stand any chance of inner peace, because hope only lifts you up higher for the eventual fall. The Stoics advise us to take a different path. To be calm, one has to tell oneself something very dark. It will be terrible. I might have to go to prison. The lump really could be malign. I probably will be fired and humiliated. My friends almost certainly will succeed. But, a huge, consoling, stoic but, one must keep in mind that one will, nevertheless, be okay. Okay, because in the end, as Marcus Aurelius said, we are each of us stronger than we think. Prison won't be fun, nor will losing one's job or being made a laughingstock, but one will get through it. Stoicism emboldens us against the worst fate can throw at us. And if you really, really can't take it, suicide is always an option. The Stoics mentioned this repeatedly. Here is Seneca. Can you no longer see a road to freedom? It's right in front of you. You need only turn over your wrists. To build up an impression of one's own resilience, the Stoics suggested one regularly rehearse worst-case scenarios. For example, twice a year, one should take off one's smart clothes, get into some dirty rags, sleep on a rug in the kitchen floor, and eat only stale bread and rainwater from an animal's bowl. And thereby, you'll make an amazing discovery. As Marcus Aurelius put it, almost nothing material is needed for a happy life, for he who has understood existence. Another subject of interest to the Stoics was anger. Romans were a bad-tempered lot. The Stoics wanted to calm them down, but they did so by an unusual route, by intellectual argument. They proposed that getting angry isn't something you do by nature because you have a Latin temper or are somehow inherently hot-blooded. It's the result of being stupid, of having the wrong ideas about life. Anger stems when misplaced hope smashes into unforeseen reality. We don't shout every time something bad happens to us, only when it's bad and unexpected. For example, you never shout just because it started raining, even though rain can be horrible, because you've learned to expect rain. The same should apply to everything. Don't only expect rain, expect betrayal, infamy, sadism, theft, humiliation, lust, greed, spite. One will stop being so angry when one learns the true facts of the misery of life. The wise person should aim to reach a state where simply nothing could suddenly disturb their peace of mind. Every tragedy should already be priced in. We're going to leave you with the most beautiful remark that Seneca made, just as Nero's guards were grabbing him and shoving him into a bathroom where he was meant to take a sharp knife and kill himself. His wife Paulina and two children were panicking, weeping, clinging to his cloaks. But Seneca turned to them, pulled a weary smile at them, and simply said, "What need is there to weep over parts of life? The whole of it calls for tears. We have much to learn from the Stoics."